You're welcome to episode 6 of The Office Block with me, Paul Dillon, and we're happy to be back at the Headstuff studio here on Lombard Street in the very beating heart of Dublin. Thank you for your very generous response to our last show on tech workers and trade unions, and thanks to those who participated in our online poll where 93% said that big tech companies should be more conscious of their responsibilities to society. There are lots of coverage on that issue at the moment and debate around it. Other news of interest to us at the moment includes the review of the pay cap in the bailed out institutions and the new strategy that is being compiled on the future of the international financial services sector. But more of that anon. For now, I want to introduce our guest today, who is well known to me as a work colleague in the Financial Services Union. She's none other than Mandy Lacombra, Senior Industrial Relations Officer with the FSU, among other things. Mandy, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you. Can you tell me a little bit about your background, Mandy? How does one end up as a Senior Industrial Relations Officer with the Financial Services Union?
That's a long one. How long have
you
got?
A long story.
Well, I suppose I started out my working life in the early 90s, probably, and I would have worked in the music industry and the arts starting off, and some of that would have been very precarious work. And then I probably wanted to settle down and have a more steady job, and I ended up going to work for the Dublin Airport Authority at Dublin Airport, the old Aerinta at the time. And I suppose when I got to that stage, I was in probably a very highly unionised environment. I'd probably had some negative experiences in previous jobs and had said, you know, there's absolutely no way I'm ever going to work anywhere else that's not going to be unionised. I think within about 2 weeks of being in there, I became the shop steward in
two
my
weeks.
Area. Yeah, within about 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
I was mouthy from the start. And we had a series probably of incidences and things that were going on at the time, like Sunday pay had just come in and we were kind of arguing for Sunday pay. So I got very involved very quickly. And then I became the senior shop steward in the area. And I suppose being at the airport and at that time, and probably still now, it's a five union, multi-union environment. So it's a highly unionised organisation and there's a lot of back and forth with other unions. So I probably decided early enough on that my favourite part of my actual job was the part that I wasn't getting paid for, which was being a union representative and being a shop steward. So I had decided that I would like to work for a trade union, become an industrial relations official. And my circumstances at the time didn't allow me to do it. I had a small child who's now grown up. So, you know, doing shift work and all that kind of stuff suited me when he was small. He was in school. So when he was going to college then, I decided then that I'm going to go back to college at the same time because I wanted to retrain and I wanted to do industrial relations and do my degree. So even though I had been a shop steward for 20 years, I didn't actually have, you know, the paper qualifications. So I wanted to get that done before I started looking around for work. And so that's what led me to the FSU. Did that and started looking for jobs.
Tell me a little bit about what it's like to be a shop steward, because one of the things is, you know, we live and breed trade unions. We work for the Financial Services Union. So we're very, very familiar with this world of activists and representatives. What's it like being a shop steward, just on the shop floor every day, dealing with workers? What's the role like?
Well, I don't want to put anybody off because it's quite stressful. If you're actually a shop steward yourself, you know, people are coming to you constantly. And you have to remember, it's a voluntary role. You know, so, you know, as an official, you don't want to put too much pressure on your shop stewards, because if you've got good shop stewards, you want to keep them because they're absolutely invaluable to us as working officials. They're invaluable to have really strong people on the ground. They're your eyes and ears in the employment. They are the people that know the employment and know the management, know the way the company works, and also know the people and the workers, and the workers trust them. So, you know, they're very important from our perspective. But being a shop steward yourself, I suppose it's extremely important for the employees to have somebody that they can go to, you know, and you need a strong character that can do it, and somebody who is, you know, ethical and, you know, moral and, you know, has good judgment and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they're very important. I'd see them as the most important cog in the wheel of the trade union, to be honest with you.
It makes a huge difference, Mandy, doesn't it? Because we can see every day the value of having a good workplace representative. Mm. It just makes such a massive difference in terms of the quality of work.
Well, it makes your life so much easier in work, you know, if you have somebody to go to.
Our topic today is bullying and harassment in the workplace. And this is a really big issue for people out there. I mean, let me share with you, Mandy, and our listeners. I mean, I work as an organiser with the Financial Services Union, so I'm getting the queries and the calls from people who are interested in becoming part of the union. And it's just an issue that crops up again and again and again. I feel bullied, I feel harassed, and I don't know what to do, so I'm approaching a union. In terms of bullying and what it means, and harassment and what that means, can you just maybe define, you know, for listeners, like, what is bullying in the workplace? How does it manifest itself?
Well, bullying, I suppose, can really be defined as repeated mistreatment of a person or a group. And it's really using persistent, aggressive, unreasonable behaviour. So it can be verbal, it can be non-verbal, psychological, physical abuse, intimidation, humiliation, all that kind of stuff. You know, but it's really, I suppose, different for each person as well. But that's kind of, you know, what the definition would be.
Have you dealt with bullying yourself as a workplace representative?
I have. And not only as a workplace representative, I've experienced bullying myself. I have witnessed bullying myself, and I have represented workers who've been bullied. I think in terms of being bullied yourself in any situation, whether it's in school or in an employment or something, you do have a certain empathy for anybody else that is bullied because it's such a traumatic experience. In terms of witnessing bullying, I think, you know, anybody who witnesses bullying should do something about it. So I think even sometimes the bully doesn't even know that they're a bully. But I mean, there are an awful lot of people who will walk by and witness it and not do anything about it.
I think standing up and responding to it, Mandy, is just a theme that's going to run throughout this recording, because it's something that is so important, how you go about doing it and the, you know, the ways that you can do that effectively.
Well, we all have a moral responsibility to help create a positive workplace, you know, and we don't want to be working somewhere, you know, where there are bullies prevalent.
And how widespread is bullying, Mandy? Because, I mean, my impression is that, because I'm seeing it, I particularly in in different environments that we're encountering this as an issue. How widespread is bullying from your point of view? I mean, is it something that's confined to particular types of workplaces? Does it crop up in some areas more than others?
Well, I think we can all probably safely say that it's everywhere in every kind of sector of employment. I wouldn't say it's too much of a stretch to even say that nearly every single person has either witnessed, experienced, or been part of some bullying scenario. But I mean, it's well documented that certain sectors are higher than others. For example, the education sector, teaching is very, very high. Public service jobs are very high. The health service is atrocious. You know, the health service, huge bullying in the health service. In terms of our own sector, in the financial services sector, it's not quite as high as other areas. There's probably still significant amounts of bullying going on, and we know that from representing workers. But there's also sometimes can be a culture of bullying in a workplace. But it seems that agriculture is the place to work, because there's no bullying in agriculture. So all that myth of don't ever work with animals doesn't seem to be true.
I think, Mandy, one thing that you referred to there, that I just want to hone in on a second, is just this definition of bullying, right? Because there may be behaviour which people might feel uncomfortable about. But what is the difference between bad behaviour on the part of a colleague and bullying?
Well, I think we need to be aware that, of course, there's a certain amount of conflict, disagreements or animated debates that are part and parcel of a working environment. Bullying, though, really refers to repeated abusive behaviour towards a colleague over a period of time, I suppose. And it differs from normal conflict because it involves unfair, unethical kind of behaviours. And it can cause significant harm, you know, to the individual and the whole organisation. But I suppose the real difference is you can often at times have once-off disagreements in work, but repeated, you know, nitpicking is the bullying.
Because, I mean, it's very important now that, particularly in a collaborative workplace, that, you know, there's discussion and there's debate about issues, and there may be disagreement within that.
That
is absolutely different. But it's absolutely different to bullying and, you know, making people feel humiliated and undermined.
Ostracising people as well, bullying people by exclusion, you know, giving people, you know, heavy targets, workloads. Even bullying is still as well, if you're not acknowledging people's work. And, you know, bullies have ways of doing things, you know, that they will find ways, like we were talking about before, about the kiss up, kick down, you know, the type of a bully that in a workplace is oftentimes maybe middle management or senior management, or it's generally predominantly management. It can, of course, be a colleague, but it's usually management. But they always hide their behaviours. They're always the kiss up to their superiors, so that, and they kick down lower. And then, you know, if somebody complains, they have this fantastic reputation, but they've made you out to be a terrible worker, and it's terrible, you know.
So what about proving what bullying is? Because I know from experience and dealing with different cases how difficult it is to prove. So what advice do you have to someone out there who's listening to this and says, look, I feel as if I'm being bullied. What should I do? How can I deal with this?
The first thing we should probably say is, you know, if somebody is being bullied, they're obviously suffering, and, you know, they're quite fragile, and it's very stressful. Yeah, it's usually generally turns out to be a very protracted process when you're trying to represent them, because you have to prove it. So it's really important for the person who's being bullied to, I suppose, have all their ducks in a row. So in order to properly present a case, if you have a grievance, you know, it's imperative the individual being bullied records every incident, you know, and that would include dates, times, details of any information, relevant gestures, anything that's happened, and a well-documented list of incidents of harassment is critical. For taking the grievance internally, or if you're going externally, or often to obtain redress through the legal system.
But your basic advice, Mandy, though, is presumably to try and address it as quickly as you can.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, not, do you know what? Sometimes these things, if they're addressed quickly and nipped in the bud, they can be sorted out. I mean, very, very serious bullying and very repeated and I suppose very, very serious instance, you know, where the person's really suffering and has been through an absolute trauma, you know, obviously it might take a bit longer. They may be out sick or whatever. But I mean, in terms of nipping it in the bud quickly, it's the best resolution to have, I suppose. We need to remember that the mental well-being of somebody who is suffering from bullying, it's been well proved that, you know, 45% of people who are victims of bullying suffer from mental health, you know, and there's all sorts of stresses. Like it's been, I suppose, recognised as the main source of distress associated with health and decreased well-being, lowering job satisfaction and performance, reduced commitment, absenteeism.
Absenteeism is an interesting one, because I suppose that a common response is probably, if you are being bullied on a consistent, serious basis, is either to be absent from work or perhaps leave your job.
Yeah, and you know, this is when you start talking about precarious employment as well, becomes a big issue, because, you know, it's well documented as well that people who are on 0 hour contracts or people who are dependent on their managers to give them shifts or whatever, they're less likely. Low-paid workers on precarious contracts are much less likely to speak up about bullying, because they just feel that, you know, they're just not going to get the shifts, they're not going to be looked after, they're going to be ditched, and they may leave.
Like, and I mean, what you're saying there really is very interesting, because if you're in a sort of let's take a unionized environment like that, where very familiar with, you may be able to go to a representative who can assist you pursue a grievance. You may take your notes and so on. You may attempt to nip it in the bud early on. But if you are isolated out there, Mandy, it may be more difficult for you to come forward with your issue.
Yeah, and there's been lots of studies now. There hasn't been so many in Europe now, but I was looking at a study there a while ago in the States where they've started to look at the socioeconomic factor associated with that as well.
Okay.
Like 40%, I think it's 30 or 40%, I don't have the stats here in front of me, people actually leave their job because of bullying.
Yeah.
And, you know, that has detrimental effects, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, there's studies now saying that people who have left because of bullying find it harder to get employment, their confidence is gone. You know, while they're out sick or whatever, they've the inability to pay bills, you know, it has a huge effect on people, you know.
What about the role of colleagues and co-workers? I mean, if someone witnesses bad behaviour in the workplace, something that they feel is wrong, what should they do?
Well, they should absolutely speak out about it. I mean, there's no way that anybody should sit back and look at anybody being bullied or treated badly. It's just not on. I think that there's certain types of people who will always stand up for people. There's other people that find it harder. But I mean, there needs to be, I suppose, a culture in the workplace where people will call it out. Yeah. You know, we have to work in safe, positive working environments. if anyone is experiencing any harassment or bullying and you witness it, it needs to be called out. I mean, that's the only way it'll stop. I mean, if people are covering this stuff up, you know, it'll just continue.
One of the things, I suppose, that I'm very conscious of, Mandy, when we're having this discussion is that there's different types of workplace and different scenarios. One of the things I've heard said over the years, you know, is people refer to a culture of bullying. They might say this place is a culture of bullying or this place is a toxic workplace. Have you encountered workplaces that could be described in these terms?
Yeah. Well, I think it's very obvious that some organisations can be the bullier of the employees. You know, bullying behaviours by supervisors can be associated with a culture of bullying and are the management style of the supervisors. An authoritative management style with bullying behaviours, making subordinates fearful and allowing supervisors to bolster that authority on others. That's a kind of like a culture of bullying. As well as that, like this I think is quite an important point. The lack of monitoring of the punishment or corrective action of somebody that does do that. So if you have managers that are behaving like that and you don't pull them up like that, you're allowing a culture of bullying in the organisation.
In terms of the response to that, Mandy, what can trade unions do about bullying? Are there structures and policies that can be put in place to prevent bullying and avoid the sort of issues that we've been talking about here?
Well, every workplace should have a policy and procedure on bullying and harassment in the workplace, you know, and
which should spell out clearly
what you should do,
the sort of workplace that you should be in,
behaviours of people. It'll spell out everything. It'll also spell out what you should do if something happens to you. And I think that in unionised organisations, I think it's easier to get redress for this stuff. I think it's easier to counteract this stuff because I think people have the support there that they possibly don't have in non-unionised organisations. And by the way, I'm always very, very suspicious of any organisation that doesn't allow it to be unionised. I mean, what are you hiding if you won't let a union in?
That's the thing. I mean, I'm very conscious again that, you know, if you have good policies in place, if you've got good procedures, you've got facilities for people to come forward. But something about some workplaces being different to others, I mean, if you have particular management styles, say, if places are very rigid and very hierarchical, for example, that may lend to certain practices. And in terms of organising workplaces, perhaps a little bit more democratically, with a little bit more worker involvement in decision making, is that the sort of thing that could contribute to a culture where there is less bullying?
Well, the simple answer to that is a unionised workforce. You know, I mean, let's be honest, that's the way to go. I mean, all this business of having these like employee representative groups and stuff that are, you know, have managers involved in them and handpicked people for committees and stuff, that's not representation. It's much more democratic to have your trade union involved and have people, you know, speaking out honestly. You can shape everything, you know, by having a union.
I mean, the difference, you know, between having a unionised environment and a non-unionised environment, it's so obvious and clear to us because we see it every day. But it's something that can be sometimes difficult to communicate to people if they're not used to that environment. Because, I mean, if you look, for example, one issue that's sometimes out there in financial services, for example, and in other sectors of the economy is, you know, a huge amount of tasks being given to people that are unreasonable.
And that's bullying.
And that can constitute bullying. Yeah,
that is
sure.
Bullying,
But again, in a unionised workplace, you're in a position to, you know, maybe do something about this. In a non-unionised workplace, it's very, very difficult.
Well, there's a bit of a fear culture, I suppose, in some places where people are afraid to speak out about things. But definitely,
Mandy, can you speak to us about the notion of dignity in the workplace? It's a fairly old and central tenet of the trade union movement that workers should be entitled to dignified and meaningful work. What does that mean to you?
Well, everybody deserves respect in the workplace. And it's not only about being treated fairly and justly by your employer in terms of, you know, interaction on a day-to-day basis. It also includes things like, you know, wages, terms and conditions, job security. It's an abundance of things.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for me, bullying and harassment are the opposite to dignity in the workplace. Dignity for me, it's those things that you say, Mandy, but it's also respect for the job that you do. I think people really want to feel that their job, their role is respected. And if they don't feel that, I think it leads to demotivation.
Well, it does. And it leads to complete demotivation. And anywhere that has a culture of bullying, it's highly unproductive for the whole for the whole company.
An area that's worth exploring before we wrap up is harassment at work, which is separate from bullying, but it's a very real problem for people who are on the receiving end of it. How do you define harassment at work, and how can it be addressed?
Well, I suppose harassment at work is generally defined within the Employment Equality Acts as underlying grounds. So you'll be talking about civil status, family status, sexual orientation, religion, age, disability, race, membership of the travelling community, and gender. And what's different about harassment as opposed to bullying is that, you know, we talk about bullying being repeated behaviour. But harassment only has to happen once. So whether it can have a strong physical component, contact, touch in any form, intrusion into personal space, damage to your possessions, it can be assault, you know. And I suppose what we've seen a lot recently with the Me Too movement is in terms of sexual harassment, it's really come to the fore now about people speaking out in the workplace, with women speaking out, which was probably something that, you know, obviously hasn't been for quite some time. I was over in New York actually in January, and I attended the Women's March in New York in January this year, and the Me Too movement was really strong at the Women's March. And I think there was estimated that there was like 200,000 people on the streets all chanting and shouting, and it was all races, all genders, but it was great. And Halsey did a speech, and she's an American singer, songwriter, actress. And what she talked about in her speech was, part of it was, you know, it's great that, you know, we have all these celebrities out talking about this and highlighting this and bringing it to the fore. But what's really sad is that we need to stick up for the women who have no voice in this. And that is the ordinary female worker. And I think that we've seen, you know, a lot, and we've talked about it earlier, about people in the front line in industries, you know, where they're in precarious employment, where they can't really speak out. And it's those workers really that in sexual harassment in particular, they're always afraid. Women who are on 0-hour contracts or work on a casual basis are concerned that if they make a report of sexual harassment, that their hours or shifts would be cut. And we've kind of said that already. But they're equally concerned with being dismissed. And I suppose what we should probably highlight as well is that employment equality legislation in Ireland protects workers from any form of victimisation for having made a complaint. And that includes reducing your hours or dismissing you. So, and it doesn't matter how long you're working there. You can be in the job 3 weeks and this happens. You're still protected. It's really important that anybody who suffers from anything like that does speak out. And it's really important, I suppose, again, documenting, you know, putting things in writing, because, you know, oftentimes if you make a verbal complaint in any of these precarious jobs,
what you're saying, Mandy, is very clearly that, you know, addressing it at the earliest possible stage is the way to do it. There are certain times where, unfortunately, even when people do that, it's not addressed in the workplace and you have to go elsewhere. But let's talk about that in a second, because I want...
Well, I think particularly if you're talking about sexual harassment, it's unlikely people address that immediately unless they're really, really strong. You know, it's a very difficult situation to be in, and oftentimes people don't speak about it. And it sometimes annoys me when the media start talking about, you know, oh, why didn't this person speak out for 20 years or something? Sometimes it can have a terrible effect on people and they just don't ever want to talk about it.
Yeah. And the same is true just in terms of bullying.
Absolutely,
maybe they don't feel that they can.
Well, people
can come
are afraid.
Forward.
There's a fear culture as well. I mean, bullies pick people that they can bully for a reason as well, you know.
If people need to go down the road, the legal route, Mandy, if they raise it internally but it's not resolved, what are the options available to people?
Well, first of all, I would say in any unionised employment, it generally does. It's been my experience and experience of my colleagues that we can usually get this sorted. You know, we can usually either, you know, get a situation where the person gets back to work and is happy to get back to work, or somebody might want to exit the employment and, you know, maybe get some compensation for doing that. And it's not an easy job to do, you know, to do that. But if you happen to work in an employment that's not unionised, it is difficult, but you can confide in your colleagues and look for support, and colleagues should be supportive of this. But if you want to go down another route, you can go to the WRC, the third party, or you can go down the legal route and get a solicitor. if people haven't been, if things haven't been resolved to your satisfaction, yeah. I wouldn't let it go. But the only thing I will say is, again, it's a very protracted process and it takes a lot out of someone. So, you know.
I mean, you're really talking about creating workplaces where, if possible, bullying doesn't happen in the first place.
Well, that would just be perfect, wouldn't it? But where are we going to get this utopia?
But I suppose that's the importance of having a union there that achieves some kind of dignity and respect. And, you know, a workplace where people feel that they can come forward and speak.
Yeah, it has to be a policy.
You know, people where they feel they can speak up.
Can speak up culture, yeah.
People who work with the public or who are in what we call customer-facing roles may be particularly vulnerable to abuse and behaviour which might make them feel uncomfortable. What advice can you give to people who are uncomfortable with the behaviour of customers or clients?
Well, I suppose the first thing we have to note is that every business has a duty of care under the health and safety laws to provide a safe working environment. So it doesn't matter if the complaint is coming from an employee to your employer about a customer, they still have a duty of care to look after you. We see this a lot, I suppose, in jobs like retail and in the service industry. And, you know, I've even had experience of it myself. You know, it's tough going. Yeah. Like, what I would say is it has to be called out immediately. I mean, you have to, you don't have to take it. Now, I'm the type of person who would call it out with the actual customer, but that's probably not the best advice to everybody. But it should be reported. It should be spoken about. And you are to be provided with protection for that. What disappoints me is, in terms of in the Republic of Ireland, the trade union movement haven't really galvanised around bullying and harassment in the workplace. In terms of front-facing workers, I think Mandate Trade Union is the only ones that have done something like the Respect Retail Workers campaign, which was a very good campaign that they launched a couple of years ago and I think are relaunching again. The TUC in the UK have surveyed and they've campaigned on, you know, the everyday sexism, but also on bullying in the workplace. And, you know, that reveals, you know, some staggering statistics. I think the Irish Congress of Trade Unions need to start, you know, doing something like this and the unions that are affiliated.
And it can be devastating, the effect of workplace bullying, bad behaviour from management or colleagues can be really devastating on people's working lives.
It can, of course, yeah.
And I mean, I suppose what we're really saying in this podcast is like, well, primarily, you know, bring the issue forward. But remember, if you're not in a union, if you work in a non-unionist environment, join the financial services union if you work in the financial services sector.
Absolutely.
Or another union.
And I'll represent you.
Yeah, absolutely. and if you don't work in the financial services sector, but you work in another part of the economy, join another union. Man, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
No worries.
We'll have you back again, I'm sure. I have no doubt about that. For now, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. Back to work for the two of us now, huh?
Absolutely. Just to mention a few resources if you want to follow up on anything we have discussed today. Antibullyingcentre.ie has a lot of resources on it that are worth checking out. Similarly, the Workplace Relations Commission have a lot of information that is worth looking at on their website. Also to mention that the Anti-Bullying Week takes place in the UK and Northern Ireland from the 12th to the 16th of November, and their slogan is "We Choose Respect." There's also the World Anti-Bullying Forum, which is taking place in DCU in June 2019. Our poll this month is now live, and our poll is, should employers do more to deal with bullying in the workplace? Now to something a little different before we finish up. The Financial Services Union are launching the Finance Workers Survey, which is an effort to engage workers in the sector about their conditions, their salaries, their concerns. That is launching soon from the FSU and we will be supporting that here on The Office Block. Thanks as always to our producer James, Paddy here in Headstuff and everyone at the FSU. Before I sign off, just a special appeal, if you like and enjoy the show, please download us from wherever you get your podcasts and rate us on iTunes. We would appreciate it. And until next time, thanks for listening.